passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, August the 14th, 2022. And I'm joined, as always, from my immediate south. Not always, because you weren't here last week.
I was not. I was in Binghamton.
You summarily and unprofessionally had other commitments. But you're here today, Chris Cullough. Hello.
Hello. Good morning, everybody. Those of you watching us live. And yeah, it's a fun weekend. Last night was the 20th anniversary of Empire State Wrestling. I was the ring announcer. You were in the back being the producer.
Yes, I had my agent headset on, which was really only useful a handful of times. But I produced the agented some stuff, and that was at Buffalo Riverworks in real Buffalo, New York. Few ESW shows have been in real Buffalo, but yes, a good time. Any highlights that you would like to point out?
Well, we had the alumni from the last 20 years, ESW's Lumberjacks. I thought that was a lot of fun. Jake something and Kevin Blackwood was a really, really good main event.
The main event, yep.
Speaking of main event, the main event tag team, the guys that do the circus gimmick, they were there and they had a really good match with To Infinity and Beyond. Rachel Ellering might be the nicest person I've ever met in my life. Like, she's super nice. Just overall, very, very, very good show.
Yeah, that'll be on IWTV soon, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what do you want to talk about today?
Well, we're gonna talk about Trump.
Trump?
Yeah.
What does that have to do with WrestleNomics?
Well, Vince McMahon and
just trying to shoehorn in some clickbait here because there's big Trump news as always, and as especially this week.
Well, Vince McMahon and Donald Trump have done business together.
Have they?
And that business has come to light. As we're learning more about the undisclosed amounts that Vince McMahon spent and did not inform the proper channels.
Possibly.
Possibly.
Possibly. Quite likely, I think. Probable might be the right word. We'll get into that degree of probability. So we'll discuss what W disclosed on Tuesday, how that connects to payments that Vince and or Linda and or WWE made to the Trump Foundation. If people want to participate today, how can they do that, Chris Cullough?
Yep. So if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see there's a little dollar sign right now below where you would ask a question. Put any amount you see fit for a question, and that's a super chat, and we will answer super chats throughout the show as they line up with the topic, but we will get to all your super chats.
So what's going on here? So we've got up to this point, as of Tuesday, you know, this was disclosed. I don't know if this was disclosed Tuesday morning or Tuesday afternoon. I think it was in the afternoon after closing the market. But before then, what we knew, or what WWE itself, so it's not, at least from WWE's point of view, I suppose Vince may have his own defense, but from WWE's point of view, up to this point, before this document comes out, $14.6 million in unrecorded expenses is the amount that WWE has to catch up on because of payments that WWE believes, and I don't know if there's that much dispute about it, but payments that Vince McMahon is alleged to have made with various women over the years, running from 2006 to 2022. Of course, most of the people listening probably know what we're talking about. The Wall Street Journal broke the story on June 15th about how Vince had an NDA agreement. That's redundant, isn't it? An NDA with a paralegal who's no longer with the company, who also had a sexual relationship with John Laurinaitis as well as Vince. She was paid $3 million, reportedly, to sign the NDA. These are payments. It's not just scandalous in itself, but these are also payments that should have been recorded as company expenses, even though Vince used his personal money. Why? Explain that to me, Gullah. Why Vince used his own personal money? What's the big deal here?
Because this is a publicly traded company that is, he's using personal money for something related to the business. So you're talking NDAs with employees.
Is it related to the business, though? It's just his private bit. He was having a relationship with his employee. How is it related to the business?
Well, an employee, and I mean, and including the one said employee was also promoted with a raise. But having these agreements can affect performance, work environment, and that could affect the bottom line.
I think the idea is that he made this agreement with the former paralegal as well as other women over the years to protect not only himself, but to protect the company, to ensure that they would not go public with their stories that would damage the company as well as Vince personally. He paid these women off. So, and there's all, there was a further Wall Street Journal report that raised, I believe, three additional. There is the former female talent, there is the contractor, there is the other employee. So I think that's a total of four that we know of, totaling $14.6 million in payments that must be recognized by WWE as company expenses that were not recognized as company expenses. So WWE's got to go back and adjust, reissue their financial reporting. They're going to do that and place it in 2019 and forward. So WWE, in normal circumstances, would have already reported their second quarter earnings. I originally expected it to happen based on the normal pattern of their reporting to be on August 4th. That is now two Thursdays ago. So WWE put out a filing earlier this month where they said that, you know, this is what's happening here, and we've got to reissue our financial statements, and we're targeting August 9th to do that report, that second quarter earnings and the reissuing of our prior financial reporting. But they come out with a new statement on August 9th because they haven't done their earnings report yet, saying, okay, this is going to be delayed, at least in part, apparently, because we found more payments that Vince made that should have been and weren't recorded as company expenses. $5 million worth. So we already had $14.6 million. Well, add another $5 million to it because the company, as they wrote here in this filing signed by Frank Riddick, the company has determined, we can go to the other slide, right? Because that's got the bigger, the company has determined that two additional payments totaling $5.0 million, unrelated to the allegations that led to the special committee investigation that Mr. McMahon made in 2007 and 2009, should have been recorded in the company's consolidated financial statements. Now, when this news came out, last week, Tuesday, about what, 6 days ago or so. There was I did see some consternation about this clause in here in this sentence, unrelated to the allegations that led to the special committee investigation and led to some people to raise, like, what are they talking about here? Is this not related to the alleged sexual misconduct of Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis? What's going on here? I figured, nah, it just means it's probably not related to the original allegation, which is the former paralegal's allegation, which, to remind everybody how this whole thing got kicked off, is that according to the Wall Street Journal, a friend of the paralegal, or at least someone claiming to be a friend of the paralegal, emailed the WWE Board of Directors and made them aware of the NDA payment. So that's how this whole thing got started. So many people, including myself, just assumed that that's what they're referring to here in this part of the sentence that says unrelated to the allegations that led to the special committee investigation. That still may or may not be the case in terms of what WWE and perhaps Frank Riddick is trying to say here. In any case, we can look further into this and find some very interesting connections. To emphasize what else is said here, Mr. McMahon made payments in 2007 and 2009. Well, some days later, it was brought to my attention by someone paying closer attention than me, perhaps, that 2007 and 2009, well, what happened in those years? What was a big story for WWE in those years?
Well, in 2007, Donald Trump was involved in the Battle of the Billionaires. And in 2009, he bought Raw. And I use that in quotation marks.
Yes. In a fictional storyline, although the stock market might have thought otherwise. So in these filings, which you can easily find through ProPublica's website, you know, Donald J. Trump Foundation, which is his nonprofit organization, the IRS filings have been public for a long time. And this has kind of been litigated in the media already because it was, you know, it was scrutinized around the time that Linda McMahon was running for Senate. She ran for Senate in 2010 and 2012. In any case, it's easy to find this stuff. These are his, well, not his, but the foundation's IRS filings. Okay, remember, it's a nonprofit organization to do charity work and things of that nature, supposedly. So if you look at the 2007 filing, there is a contribution listed as being from WWE with the headquarters address. Are you familiar with this headquarters address, Gullo? Would you recognize the headquarters address if you saw it?
I would not, but I'm assuming is that WWE's headquarters.
This is the address of WWE's headquarters on East Main Street in Stamford, Connecticut. And in any case, it says right here for people watching on YouTube, it says WWE made this contribution, not Vince McMahon. There's no Vince McMahon here. There's no Linda McMahon here. But anyway, WWE contributes $4 million in 2007. 2007 is the year that Donald Trump participates in WrestleMania and the build-up to WrestleMania. And then we can look at the 2009 filing and World Wrestling Entertainment, same address, you got a P.O. box here, Stamford, Connecticut, $1 million. $1 million in 2009, the year that Donald Trump participates in a couple episodes of Raw. Okay. So there's that. Here's a photo of some press conference where Donald Trump and Vince McMahon are posing together with special referee Stone Cold Steve Austin to promote WrestleMania. The storyline on Raw, where I believe he just appears on video. This is, I believe, June 15th, 2009, and then the following episode, the 22nd, 2009, he in the first episode, he appears on video. He has bought Raw, but then he forces Vince McMahon in this fictional storyline to buy it back and buy it from him at a profit to Donald Trump. So there's that. This is what we would call circumstantial coincidence at this point, circumstantial evidence. I reached out to WWE as I was looking into this and asked if it was an unrelated coincidence. I kept them up to date on how I was looking into this and how I was going to publish an article about it. I got no response so far anyway.
I ask you this though?
Yes.
So
yes.
We'll never find out obviously who the NDAs are paid to unless they come forward. Would we find out this because it's not an NDA? Like, would this eventually come out?
I think it's a question of how transparent is WWE going to be with the results of its investigation. I think that's a very good question. Are we going to get public disclosures? Are we going to get like a public report from WWE's board of directors and whatever the results are of their investigation? This may be confirmed eventually. I agree with you. We're probably never going to get confirmation about who the women are who Vince McMahon had signed NDAs for millions of dollars. But we might get this because there's no NDA apparently involved here, right? So there's that. The reason why I feel comfortable examining this publicly is because it seems highly unlikely that this is just an unrelated coincidence. This is a very WrestleMania thing to do, but I sort of did the probability on this. We've got 2 years here, right? We got 2007 and 2009. They appear to be investigating a period of at least from 2006 to 2022, which is this year. So if we took any 2 year fall, hang on tight, so follow me here if you can. We're going to take any 2 year pair that is only 2 years or less distance from each other. So, for example, 2006 and 2007, 2006 and 2008, and then you go all the way through the years to the present, and you get a series of years. This will be easier for those watching on YouTube to follow what I'm saying here, probably. And then I took all of the values that could have been between, let's say, we know that there's an NDA agreement for $3 million. We know that there's an NDA agreement for, I think it's about $7.5 million. So if we take that entire range of values on increments of one-tenth, and we do the probability here. Anyway, the odds of this being, based on those assumptions, and you can obviously arbitrarily change those parameters to make this narrower or wider, but based on those parameters, this is kind of like a 1 in 2,000 chance that this is an unrelated coincidence. That, in other words, the likelihood that Vince McMahon / Linda McMahon / WWE just happened to make in the years of 2007 and the years of 2009 some other payments that just happened to total $5 million is possible. Possible. The odds are not zero. We're pretty close.
If this is what happened, right, I think, it's basically a talent agreement. He's giving money to Donald Trump, whether to Trump's charity, whatever it might be, to make a talent appearance. I mean, that stuff doesn't technically have to be reported. Like, so we don't know wrestler salaries or performance salaries, but... So, but when you have to put it in like just a talent of overall talent expenses, like if they were reporting it in their quarter filings when this should have happened.
So I think what happened here is that WWE has now determined, this is what my expectation, this is not a fact, but I suspect that it might be a fact. What I think happened here is that WWE determined these payments that you made to the Trump Foundation, we now believe that these were a compensation for Trump's appearances on WWE television. Trump's appearances on WWE television obviously were to benefit the company. You didn't record these as company expenses at the time. They have to be recorded as company expenses. Maybe this doesn't come to light unless the other stuff about the NDAs comes to light first and then leads to further scrutiny that might not have happened otherwise. But that would be my guess about what has happened here. Now, WWE has made comments in the past when this has come up in the context of Linda McMahon's political activities. Because why would this come up in the context of Linda McMahon's political activities? Because for one reason, perhaps, is because there's a perception of pay to play here in terms of, by God, the McMahons have been so generous to the Trump Foundation over these years. And now you're at least in the case of her appointment to the Small Business Administration during Trump's cabinet, during Trump's term. It's a reasonable question to ask. Is Linda McMahon getting appointed to a cabinet position because of the McMahon's financial generosity to Trump-related activities in the past? But this was also raised in the lead-up to her, I believe, second run for U.S. Senate in Connecticut, both of which she was not elected. So in the past, when this has come up, journalists have reached out to W for comment, and W has said everything from it was Vince only making personal payments to later, after she was no longer running for Senate, saying, oh no, it was Vince and Linda. They then later in 2016, in a comment that they gave to Huffington Post at the time, were willing to say that it was Vince and Linda personally giving money. Now, perhaps they just share an account. It's very possible that, people who are married may share a bank account that they may make payments from. And it's been stated by WB in the past. Again, they have not commented on this more recently, but in the past, WB spokespeople have said that it was that those payments to the Trump Foundation were not compensation for Donald Trump's appearances on WB programming. Were not. And that Donald Trump was paid separate appearance fees. Now, W's board's investigation may have believed differently more recently, but that's what they have said in the past.
We got a super chat from Tim B. Thank you, Tim. How does WB record expenses without throwing their balance sheet off without the offsetting revenue? Is this WB acting as the payment processor?
It's probably my own flaw that I always have to like reread the question. How does WB record expenses without throwing off their balance? Well, I think this addresses the question. Is that, you know, WB is continuing to say in these statements that even the $19.6 million that we're at here in total unrecorded expenses, if it were all in one quarter, they say yes, it would be material. What's material mean? Material in this context means anything that a reasonable investor would consider important to considering the value of the company. So this is important to consider the context of what is WB's total financial picture. Okay, this is a company that generates about, you know, just over $1 billion in revenue a year. And that's what they did last year. I believe $1.1 billion in annual revenue for 2021. On the scale of $1 billion, even $19 million, $19.6 million, is not a lot, right? That's what is that as a percent? What's 19.6? 19.6 divided by $1 billion. That's like 2% of their revenue. So it's fairly small. If it was in one quarter, they say yes, it would be material. It looks like they're gonna. This is my interpretation. They haven't been explicit about this. My interpretation is that they're going to reissue financial statements and just spread that money where they think it belongs. Maybe they have said something specific to this, but they're going to spread that money, it looks like, along the course of like 3 years, so that it will end in the end, it will not be material because it'll be sort of distributed over 3 years. It'll be relatively minor. So I think what we're going to end up with when WB finally reissues their financial statements, we're going to end up with like a slightly less profitable WB. But not a major difference, and not something that in and of itself is going to affect the value of the company, that is the stock price.
We're going to continue this super chat train with MJ. Thank you, MJ. What about the political contributions during pandemic that allowed them to operate in Florida during shutdowns? When will that come back to haunt them?
You'd have to remind me what that is. That sounds familiar. What I do remember, Governor Ron DeSantis acting indignantly to some question from media in a press conference, and That sounds familiar. We might have even talked about it at the time. But I don't know that we're going to see a lot more along these lines. But yeah, I think the Trump money, the money to the foundation, we're talking about $5 million. I don't know if those contributions were comparable to you know, one payment of $4 million, another payment of $1 million. We'll see. But thank you, MJ. So, is there anything else to say here? I guess we could go on here and mention that there was a comment when this was looked into by outlets like Forbes in the past that Donna Goldsmith gave a comment to Forbes in a, we'll get the correct year here, in 2007. Donna Goldsmith, who people can see on the screen here on the left, she was the former chief operating officer of WWE. This is an image of her on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, I believe, when WWE was ringing the opening bell one day. She's seen here with Linda McMahon and Stephanie McMahon and Michelle Wilson, all of whom were WWE executives, I believe, at the time. And she told Forbes in 2017 that, quote, "My guess is that the contributions, that is, to the Trump Foundation, did come directly from Vince. It was probably a payment for the hair versus hair match," referring to the 2007 WrestleMania match between Umaga and Bobby Lashley. Didn't like Trump get his name wrong or something in a promo?
Yeah, I think it was Umaga. I think that was the joke. Something like that.
Yes.
Or maybe it was Bobby Lashley's name he got wrong. I think that's what it was.
Yes. It's funny. Everybody says like Trump is a big pro wrestling fan. Sometimes you see that in like mainstream media when people are understandably comparing his form of politics and rhetoric to that of pro wrestling. I don't think he's like a regular watcher or studier of the wrestling business, but there are definitely some similarities. Anyway, yes.
I just started thinking, did he ever appear any other times in the publicly traded era? Obviously, we know he's there in the late 80s,
well, Hall of
WrestleMania.
Fame. Hall of Fame Hall in 2013. Fame.
Okay.
Yeah. And to my knowledge, there are no related payments. And by the way, we should explain, like, why not just pay him in the traditional way? Why not just, you know, pay him as an independent contractor or whatever, like they would any other talent? Because the Trump Foundation is a nonprofit organization. And at least in this country, nonprofit organizations are not subject to the same sort of taxation. Tax policies that for-profit businesses are, and I'm not a legal expert or a taxing expert, but I would expect that if this happened, that the motivation would be, hey, look, you can, why don't you just pay it to the organization, in lieu of me contributing this money to the organization, just pay the money to the organization that maybe I was going to spend anyway, but rather than me taking it and then putting it in the organization, you just put it right in the organization, right in the nonprofit organization. And that way, you know, it's not going to get taxed in the same way as if you paid it to me directly. And hey, and maybe this eased the McMahon's personal tax burden because you can say, hey, I gave $4 million to charity in 2007. I gave $1 million to charity in 2009, and that may have lowered the McMahon's tax burden. But accountants may be able to enlighten us on that subject. That may or may not be legal, too, by the way. That sounds shady to me if that's how it went down. So we'll see what happens here. As Nate Milton said a few weeks ago, when it came to Al Capone, it wasn't the murdering that took him down. It wasn't the bootlegging.
Nope.
That took him down. What was it?
It was tax laws, tax
it was
evasion.
Tax evasion.
You ever watch The Untouchables?
No. Is that about Al Capone?
Yeah, that's about that whole thing. Yeah, it's I don't know. I think Kevin Costner, if I remember, but Sean Connery and. It's a really good movie, but yeah, it's about how they tried to get him down for bootleg and they couldn't, so they got him for the tax evasion.
Okay. All right. So coincidentally, and to whatever information we have at this point, it is purely coincidental, apparently. The FBI did execute on a search warrant on Monday to collect a number of boxes, you know, in according to the filings that were released, the legal filings that were released on Friday, detailing what was taken by the FBI from the Mar-a-Lago residence, which is Donald Trump's residence in Florida. They took a lot of boxes of classified documents. We have no information at this point to suggest that this is related to the situation with WB and Vince McMahon. But that's what we know right now. So
real quick, MJ just gave us a corrected super chat. He goes, correction, the political PAC run by Linda did the contribution, not McMahon's directly. Sorry about that. So regarding the pandemic, I believe.
Thank you, MJ. Even spending money to make his own correction, I very much appreciate that. Yeah. But that, I mean, whether or not it's the McMahon's personally or whether it's Linda's, you know, political organizations, I think, you know, it's worth scrutiny. You know, I wonder, you know, how involved or how close any of Linda McMahon's actions are to WB's interests at this point. Obviously, Linda still owns a great deal of stock. If you exclude financial institutions, I believe she would be the third largest personal owner of WB stock behind, of course, Vince and then Stephanie. Stephanie owns more shares than Linda does. Although if, you know, if Vince were to pass away or something, I don't know where Vince's stock would go. But yeah, it doesn't appear to me at this point. Like, I would buy it if, you know, if Linda was quite removed from whatever interests that WB has or that Vince even has at this point. But that's just my intuition. So anything else there?
And nothing else here. I think we kind of answered it. Like I said, maybe they'll put out a public report at least about this, and we kind of know that. I mean, that these were for Donald Trump being a talent. These contributions to the charity.
And you know, we haven't gotten a Q2 call yet. I would guess that maybe we should expect that this coming week, maybe on Tuesday, maybe on Friday, on Thursday. Those seem to be the weekdays that they often choose to do an earnings call on. So maybe we will have an earnings call this week. I've been thinking, you know, like, are they just going to like drop a 10Q, which is a quarterly report filing, one afternoon, and then just not do a conference call? I wouldn't completely rule that out.
They're not legally obligated to do a conference call, right?
Yeah. I don't think there's like any SEC rule that you have to do an earnings call with analysts. But there may be other motivations why you should that I can't articulate. But I did ask you know someone who I trust knows more about this than I do, who told me that no, they'll probably still do an earnings call. So we'll see. I would have, you know, I know earnings calls with stock analysts are not media calls with journalists, but I would like to hear someone ask about whether or not this is actually related to the Trump Foundation contributions, whether or not that extra $5 million that we learned about on Tuesday is related to the Trump Foundation contributions, which just happened to total $5 million, the same amount that you just disclosed in the same years that you just disclosed the payments were made. I would want to know that. But is it necessary for investors to know that? I guess. I don't know. So, yeah, it'll be a very interesting earnings call because I'm sure there's going to be questions around Vince and around the future of the company and around the notion about whether or not WB is going to be up for sale. I don't believe that they are really pursuing a sale or in any sort of serious negotiations to sell the company, but that's something that's obviously moved the stock price, that speculation.
These super chats keep rolling. Tim B is back here and he asks, the unrecorded expenses amount seems subjective. Why not $100 million, considering WWE has stated losing VKM in the past would be devastating?
Well, where do you get $100 million from in that? If Tim B wants to put that in the chat without a super chat to follow up, we can display that. why not $100 million, considering WWE has stated losing Vince McMahon in the past would be devastating. I mean, I don't think there's any need to count Vince McMahon's exit as an expense. I think, you know, you just like you wouldn't count COVID-19 happening as an expense. It is a risk factor, among many other risk factors that WWE discloses. It's just to let investors know, here are all the things so that you have less ability to sue us in a shareholder class action lawsuit later if our stock tanks. Here are all the risk factors. Here are all the things that might adversely affect our stock price. And Vince leaving is just one of them, among other things. You know, major natural disasters. I doubt they specify pandemics, but things that would probably fit into pandemics are specified. You know, things like keeping talent, retaining talent, and things like maintaining their media rights deals. So it's just a risk factor. But if you want to follow up on that, Tim B, we will address it. And Paul is monitoring closely.
Yes. Yeah, he does say WWE benefited for greater than $19.6 million by VKM remaining in power, according to their own filings of his worth to WWE. So he's saying by not disclosing this earlier, they've benefited more than the $19.6 million. He said $100 million was just a random number, but that's the point he's trying to make.
I guess, but that's not an actual financial transaction. And these things are financial transactions. The NDA agreements are financial transactions that have been made or are due to be made over time in the future because Vince McMahon has, at least in some of these cases, apparently, you know, he has long-term payments that are being made in installments to women with whom he's made NDAs. And those are, you know, tangible, you know, numerical, you know, these are transactions that actually have dollar values attached to them. And the Trump Foundation contributions, if that is connected to the Tuesday disclosure, that has a financial amount tied to it. So.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
In any event, and then from there, yeah. I'm not going to lose these Vince-isms, unfortunately. that notwithstanding.
Yeah. These super chats have been great, by the way. Keep them coming. Of course, you can do a little dollar sign that is under where you can ask a question on YouTube, any dollar amount you see fit, and we'll answer them throughout the show as they see fit.
Yes. So on Monday, which seems like a long time ago, I wrote an article, this 2,000-word article that is available for patrons only at patreon.com/wrestlenomics, about just what the future of wrestling and WWE specifically is going to be like, AEW involved in that too, without everyone is so sad about the departure of Vince McMahon. So sad. They are. You laugh, Chris Gullo, but people are saddened by this. Did you see that? Even Bret Hart, the man who Vince McMahon screwed, even Bret Hart is sad. Did you see that?
I mean, Bret Hart has been making a lot of comments lately as of late.
Even Bret Hart is saddened by the departure of Vince McMahon. Will WWE ever be the same again? Hopefully not. So I wanted to lay down, I guess, some info and an opinion about what WWE will be like without Vince McMahon in place. Chris Gull, your thoughts and opinion. It's now been, I would say July 22nd is the first day of the post-Vince McMahon era. So we are here some 3 weeks into the post-Vince McMahon era. And has WWE changed? Let's set the table here. Wait. Have you watched some WWE programming since July 22nd?
I have.
You have? What have you watched?
Mostly Raws. I haven't really caught SmackDown, I think, just because of the night it's on Friday nights. But I have watched Raw and the product. You could tell, maybe this is just because we've been in wrestling shows, but you could tell that the promos are coming more natural. They seem like there's a little more freedom with them, a little less scripted. We're seeing certain talent be brought back that were released under Vince McMahon. And certain talent that were stuck on main event are now being featured in big angles, like Tommaso Ciampa. And we could see further talent that left the WWE or did not re-sign come back. So it seems like a more fan service product, if that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, I see two prominent opinions out there in the wrestling media space, and one is that wow, things have really changed big time. Oh my God, look at all these people are coming back. Product, way different now, and I see another set of opinions that are like, sort of the traumatized partner of like, this isn't going to change, nothing's going to change. This is so overrated that anything is going to change. And look at the ratings; they're already back down. And look at some other factors; they're already back down. And this is totally being overblown. Those are the opinions that I see out there. But let's look at the cage match ratings for whatever those are worth. Now, I would say in the defense of sort of a pro Paul Levesque, who is now the new head of creative, if you're just catching up, and in sort of in a way that I would think that would be, if anything, more favorable to the cynical outlook. If we look at cage match, now maybe people would argue that there's an inflation to cage match. Maybe cage match is too easy, too positive. In any case, we can look at the trend over time. Now, there are more votes on the most recent episodes. There are over 100 votes for the Raw episodes in the last 2 weeks, whereas, in the pre-Triple H era, everything is under 50, right? In some weeks, it's as low as 27. But in any case, point is, in the last 3 weeks, these are the three Raws that have been under the supervision of Triple H's head of creative. They have been rated a 7.9 or higher, closer to 8 in the last 2 weeks. And there's nothing for Raw since WrestleMania. And I didn't go back to look further here, but that's what we're looking at right now. Everything since WrestleMania is under a 7. Right? Yeah. Everything since WrestleMania, at least, is under a 7.0 on the cage match rating.
Yep.
And everything after is above a 7.0. So these presumably hardcore fans who are voting on cage match, if you got a cage match user account, you're probably a hardcore wrestling fan, for whatever you think that means. And these are being received more positively. Now, what about SmackDown? SmackDown? Similar. There is one SmackDown back here in the Vince era on June 10th that did get a 7.7 rating, which is higher than anything yet. But we do have these three SmackDowns. Actually, I guess this is the day that Vince retires on the 22nd, and that is rated pretty low. On the day that Vince retires, though, for what it's worth, I guess Bruce Pritchard is still leading creative at that time. Certainly these shows in the first weeks were written largely while Vince was still in charge of creative. So perhaps you could say it's only these last 3 weeks from July 29th and onward. In any case, these are a 7.4, a 6.3, a 7.5. So pretty positive compared to everything else since WrestleMania, which is in the Vince era.
Or in a cage match. 1.21.
We had an abysmal SmackDown in terms of cage match reception on July 8th. So we see in the cage match, reception and the cage match data, for what that's worth, more positive reception from people who I would think would be pretty discerning fans. If you're going into cage match to register a rating, you're probably a pretty discerning fan, meaning I would assume that you're going to be pretty, you're not going to be satisfied too easily. You're not going to be, I'm sure that there's all sorts of people all across the spectrum in terms of the degree to which they are hard or easy graders. But I would think this is not just your average, I've only ever heard of WWE type wrestling fan. So based on that, that would suggest that this is being received more positively. Now, we don't have thousands of voters here, unfortunately. I don't know where else I could find more voters to get a better impression of reception, but we do have, you know, a more positively received Raw and SmackDown. Well, we can watch that over time to see if that trend continues. So that's what's happening here. Now, Vince McMahon was a pretty successful booker for a long time, right? He especially in the last few years, he brought WWE to even greater prominence than it was before in terms of being a pop culture global phenomenon. Especially since 2016. Would you agree?
I mean, he's we have to be reminiscent of it. He's the guy that took pro wrestling out of the smoky cigarette-filled bars.
The bars.
But
yes.
Yeah. But yeah, he was not.
Where did we were participating in the production of an independent wrestling show last night. Where was it?
It was at an entertainment venue, I would say.
That had bars. It was yes. Basically a massive bar. It was Riverworks is basically a massive bar. So I would say pro wrestling is still in the bars. If anything, it's more so in the bars today than it ever was. But anyway, so my opinion is that, I mean, look, especially from 2016 onward, yes, WWE's financial performance improved, but it improved because of the increasing value in live TV rights fees, which are guaranteed over time because of an external economy that valued more so over time live sports and sports-like programming, including WWE. During that time, things that would be indicative of consumer interest, that is, wrestling fan interest, those things declined from 2016 and forward. Now, WWE's TV shows remained highly ranked throughout that time and still today, among the most highly ranked programming in 18 to 49 on their day. Raw and SmackDown are still, you know, I've started tweeting a chart in the last few weeks saying these are the top cable original broadcasts in 18 to 49 for the prior 7 days. And Raw is often number one, or it's in the top two, top three. Dynamite is a little bit lower, maybe around number five or so for an entire week in 18 to 49 on cable. Not including reruns. Not that reruns would probably get up that high. Point is, Raw and SmackDown are still really valuable programs, even while their consumer interest drained in the late 2010s. If we ever do some sort of live event, like on a WrestleMania weekend or something, I feel like I'm going to print these cards out. This slide that's on the screen right now, we're going to print them out and laminate them and give them away for free. Just public service announcements. This is what happened in the final years of Vince McMahon, is that the W Network, that helps their business, I believe. I would argue it helped their business from 2014 to 2016 because it increased the reach for their pay-per-view events. It led to more engagement that led to downstream benefits that were evident in merchandise sales, in live attendance, paid tickets, in terms of web search, in terms of product licensing. But once people sort of got their fill after a few years of what the network did, things relaxed back down. And what we saw was the network, years before Netflix had its saturation of the domestic market in terms of subscribers, while that technology was still pretty new and still being adopted and embraced by the wider population, we saw the W Network stall in subscribers. We saw W Network by 2018. It had reached its peak and it fell back down. This new technology, that the tailwind of people embracing streaming technology, it probably should have continued growing for a few more years. And we also saw merchandise sales, both online and at the venue, decline. On an annual basis in consecutive years, you can see it on the slide right now for people watching on YouTube. From 2017, it got lower in 2018, and it got lower in 2019. And yes, the pandemic happened, and we can discount that because the first 3 months were only in the non-pandemic times. Here in 2021, also affected by the pandemic. But then product licensing. What's product licensing? What are some major categories in product licensing, Chris Cole?
That would be all the licensing deals they're doing with, like, the Netflix, contract with those.
No, that would be in media. Products, consumer products.
Okay.
Stuff you can touch with your hands. What would those things be?
All your WWE shop stuff, but like they did the deal with the trading card company and stuff like that, and action figures
and video games. WWE shop would be what's e-commerce here in the purple. Okay. That's merchandise. But action figures and video games, whether that's mobile or console, are the biggest categories here. But okay. We know WWE is licensing in numerous categories. Lunch boxes, I don't know. They were on a cereal box. I know they had the Big Show or something, or Becky Lynch on a cereal box, things like that. But largely, this is going to be tied to video game sales, action figure sales, and sales of various other things, various deals, trading card deals, sales, and things like that. I would imagine not many of them, if any of them, are guaranteed deals, but that they are tied to the sales of those products. We don't know that for sure. I don't believe that's ever been disclosed, yay or nay, but that's what I believe. So, and then we look at the revenue in that category over time. From 2017 to 2018, it goes down. In 2019, it's lower. In 2020, pandemic, okay, but it's lower. So we got consecutive years, 3 years in a row, of decline. Ticket sales, from 2017, it gets lower. And it gets lower in the following year, in 2019. That's in terms of total attendance. That's in terms of average attendance. And web search, which just so happens, in many cases, and in this case, to coincide with other forms of consumer activity, declines, both on a worldwide basis and on a U.S. basis, in each year. 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, and 2020 and 2021. Now it's flattening out lately, and I believe that's largely because of Peacock widening that distribution, just like W Network widened the distribution of pay-per-view in 2014. It just opened up all these extra homes that would consume the product. It took pay-per-view from being, in most cases, only in a couple hundred thousand homes to now being in like a million homes once it got fully saturated. And now Peacock is taking that content from 1.1 million in the U.S. to like whatever number you want to use, the 13 million paid subscribers to Peacock or the 24 million monthly active accounts. Now, the rate of consumption on Peacock of WWE content is going to be a way smaller percentage than it would be, like, basically, I guess, 100% in the form of the direct consumer network. But still, it's increasing that, like, 1.1 people who would consume it to at least a little bit higher. And that's leading to a flattening out of a lot of these metrics. So, stars are important. But by God, distribution is important too. But anyway, during all this time, there's been content, actual content. And how's that content? How has that content made WWE a better business? I would argue it hasn't. And whose responsibility is that? That's Vince McMahon's responsibility. Because Vince McMahon created a product that many people, even if you loved it, you out there listening, you loved it, you loved Roman Reigns, you acknowledge him, and you have all of your wrestlers who you love, and you love Vince, and you're sad that Vince is gone. And now you're entitled to have that opinion and that feeling. But a lot of people don't. And a lot of people got turned off by the product. And the degree to which that happened, and not only the fans, but disenfranchised a lot of talent too, who either, in the case of people like the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, didn't want to go to WWE because they were considering not going to WWE and didn't go to WWE, in part because they anticipated that if they did go to WWE, you'd have to deal with Vince McMahon, who probably wouldn't see that much value in you and might waste your career. And then you had other people like Jon Moxley who were at WWE and already felt like their careers were being wasted and that they weren't being creatively fulfilled. People like FTR. And decided to leave. All of this created an opportunity, in part, in part, media rights fees value was the biggest part of it. The leadership of the people who started AEW, including Tony Khan, was part of it. The right talent being available at the right time was part of it. But part of it also was the disenfranchisement of fans who were ready and waiting for some sort of strong alternative to WWE, and talent who didn't want to go there and perform, or at least had incentive to not. So who created AEW? Was it Tony Khan? Was it TNT? Was it Ted Turner? No. Vince McMahon had a hand in that. Vince McMahon created AEW, in a sense.
He created his own competition. I mean, he didn't create WCW, but he really created the Monday Night Wars with the quality of his product in the mid-90s as well.
No, it was Ted Turner who just viciously went after him for no good reason. The big guy, the big corporate billionaire attacking the little guy, Vince McMahon. God, I feel so bad for Vince. Nobody ever treated him fairly, and he did it all with his own bootstraps in his hands. God, what a man. Okay. Yes.
MJ just said you should put the charts as a saucer collection.
That's what to go along with the mugs, I guess. To go along with the mugs.
Little saucers, yeah.
Yeah. Are things going to be better with Triple H?
I couldn't pinpoint financials, but
does content matter? Does the quality of the content? I'm not necessarily talking about like critical reception quality. Does the quality of the content matter? I have an opinion. What's yours?
Honestly, if you have this long withstanding of a brand, probably not unless you do something atrocious.
I think content matters a lot, but I think there's truth to what you're saying.
Yeah.
The strength of your brand is especially when you're a brand that's this old and this ingrained in culture and this ingrained in people's awareness, that is a tremendous value. And we have only started to enter an era in which that matters to the degree it does. Because I think, like, we've talked about this before, like, back in the day, talk to older people about wrestling in the 70s and prior, or even the 80s and prior, there was little even brand identity out there for wrestling companies. They talk about the wrestling, and they don't talk about the name of the company. They don't talk about what we would say, the NWF. They don't talk about, if you're in LA, the WWA or whatever. They don't talk about the name of the company because there wasn't solid brand identity yet. And we're only, and the, I mean, what else there wasn't? There wasn't this vast media consumption, video consumption that there is today. We're talking about an era where there weren't even VCRs in most people's homes. And now today, there's endless video everywhere. When's the last time you were bored, Chris Cullo? I was bored a couple weeks ago, and I was like, whoa, I haven't felt this way in a long time.
Yeah.
Because the smartphone is like hitting me over the head with stuff to do and watch.
Very rarely does it happen, because even if you get that little bench of boredom, it's like, okay, what can I find new, or what do I got to catch up on new on the streaming services?
I don't know what I put in my coffee today. I'm on a roll here.
Yeah, you're amped. I'm still feeling fatigued from the show from yesterday.
Yeah. I was feeling that way this morning. I was like, man, I didn't even, I was like, you know, ruminating. I was like, I didn't even bump last night. I didn't even travel. Because I've always, you know, kind of been complaining about, yeah, the travel sort of wore me down. But it's just being there and just standing and doing stuff. Maybe I'm just such an office worker at this point. But anyway, where were we going? So like Bruno Sammartino, for example, is in wrestling circles, yes, he's respected as this enormous legend, the living legend of you know, the 60s and the 70s, especially, right? In WWF world, right? Maybe somebody like Lou Thesz for more of an NWA side, right? And there's other examples we could throw out there, but just to throw out two names, right? Those two wrestlers are not that well known to newer wrestling fans today. But Hulk Hogan is super known. Great example here. That I think here's a great example from last night. Somebody who was helping work production, his son was there. And his son was watching the monitor and he saw somebody do like a kick. You know, somebody came off the top rope and somebody, you know, the other person like gave him a big kick. And this kid who's like 9 years old or something. Yeah. So, and I was like, what year are you born? And the kid was like 2013. So what is that? Like nine. And he goes, that was like Shelton Benjamin and Shawn Michaels. I was like, what? How old are you? How do you even know about that? That was 2004. That would be like if – so I was born in 1985. That would be like – so that's how many years of difference? Six, seven. So 7 years before I was born was not 1978. When I was 9 years old, I sure as hell wasn't watching wrestling and being like, that's like that spot from 1978. Why is that different? Why is that
– well, it's easier to find that too.
Right.
I mean, it's accessibility. And I think we live in a nostalgia culture, even if people who didn't live the era. I mean, there is kids in their teens and in early 20s that are obsessed with 90s culture. And they didn't really even live it. It's just a nostalgia. We live in a nostalgia era. And also the accessibility to relive that past.
Yeah. So let's bring it back to what we're talking about. All of this has to do with brand value, for example, WWE's brand value. How? Because Triple H, for instance, is a bigger name, especially if we look at some of the Google trends, right? If we look at web search, if I compared Bruno Sammartino to Triple H, who, if we were voting for a Hall of Fame, I think you would agree with me, we would probably put in Bruno Sammartino. We might put in both Triple H and Bruno Sammartino. Yeah. I mean, he's in the Observer Hall of Fame. We will put Bruno in first.
Yes.
But in terms of awareness, public awareness, Triple H is a more well-known name, personality, than Bruno is.
Yeah. Also crossed over into pop culture. He was in TV shows. He was in movies. And I think that's a big part of it, too. The modern-day wrestling vehicle crosses more into pop culture than any of that did. Bruno Sammartino wasn't popping up on the Brady Bunch.
And there isn't, in Bruno's era and in wrestlers of his era, there just isn't as readily available video library of them, because it was more about driving people to the house show that wasn't necessarily recorded. And it wasn't on pay-per-views. Pay-per-view didn't exist yet. So anyway, how does this relate to WWE's brand values? Is that everybody sort of who existed, you know, in the, sort of the 80s and afterward. And this is one thing I've noticed in trying to like find old matches. I've made like a spreadsheet once of like, you know, here are all the great matches that I can find for each decade. And it's funnily enough, it seems like there's more. I can find more wrestling on YouTube, for example. I can find more wrestling on YouTube from the 60s than I can from the 70s. Because I think in the 70s, they just weren't anticipating video libraries being worth something later, because people didn't have VCRs yet, I guess, would be my guess. So if you started to dominate the business, or if you were dominating the business in the 80s and forward, I think you end up having a lot of brand value, because you have the video library and you have the history, and people go back and sort of relive and rewatch that history. I feel I'm not quite articulating the point that I want to make. But I guess I want to say that the brand value that WWE has today and has gained and built up to the point that it's at today is a relatively new advent. And I think it's underrated, under-talked about. So take AEW for instance, I guess, that, you know, this is the number two wrestling company in the world today. Over time, they will gain that brand value. So I guess like there's something on the horizon. I think I'm not about to make an argument that AEW is going to be as powerful and as lucrative as WWE anytime soon. But over time, AEW will gain some of this brand equity too. I wonder if the 80s and 90s are more important, because that was sort of a more nascent period in media consumption and in media development. And so like is it going to be as much as this is a question, right? Like, is content from the 2010s going to be as popular later as content from the 80s and 90s is now? I think that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But anyway, over time, AEW will gain some of this brand equity and will gain awareness that is really valuable. We'll see how it all plays out.
Do you think the like on demand, having more video on demand for them is probably a necessary tool for that? Because they don't have a Peacock or WWE Network where, hey, I want to go watch, you know,
eventually they will.
Double or Nothing in 2019.
Eventually they will. I mean, it would be like, it would be ridiculous if eventually they didn't, because it's just another way to monetize what you own. Why would you not? And it's just a matter of how they want to execute that. We'll see what happens. And so is Triple H going to do this great job here? I don't know. We'll see. Triple H lost the Wednesday Night War. Yes. But he also ran a brand called NXT from 2014 to 2018 that was a strong alternative to WWE. I think that era until they went on USA Network is a great era of professional wrestling. Produced a lot of great shows on a level. It developed stars. It was always positioned as a minor league to WWE, though, so its ceiling was kind of limited. Was NXT a financial success? We don't. Yes, WWE is a publicly traded company, but we don't really know. I highly doubt it was. But it did generate revenue that might have offset to some degree the expenses. But yes, Triple H lost the Wednesday Night War, and NXT, in my view, I don't believe ended up being a lucrative media rights property, which was part of what it was supposed to do, in my view, as well as stop AEW in its tracks before it got started. Didn't succeed at either of those things. And I would argue that, now we don't know the whole story about to what degree was Triple H's head of creative performance compromised by other forces. Don't know. Hope he writes an honest book someday and tells us. But it appears as if at least the output of what he was doing hit a wall after a while, shortly after they went to the USA Network. And it's like Bill Watts said. Bill Watts said a lot of things that we don't condone. But one of the things that he said that I think there's some truth to is that every 5 years, every booker hits a wall. And I think it's just sort of true of creative things in general. Eventually you kind of get creatively exhausted, and maybe you need a break, or maybe you need to do something different. I think that's happened with a lot of bookers over the years, even like, you know, who I would idealize as a booker, like Giant Baba. I mean, Giant Baba by the late 90s, I think his output was weakening. And maybe being in a new situation will be good for him. He has had basically a year off from doing a job like this. And he's got like a whole new set of talent. He's got whole new distribution platforms. This is the job he's been preparing for years and years. There are some valid criticisms here. Some valid questioning about what's happened already, though. We've got, is Karrion Kross really worthy of the role that he's thrown him in right away? I don't know. Is Dexter Lumis really worthy of the role that he's thrown him in right away? I don't know. Now, in his defense, I will say, look at all this talent that he spent all of the late 2010s building up, and the talent that he embraced and that he marketed and promoted, people like Adam Cole, people like, I don't know, who else is in AEW right now, who is in NXT, I guess the Undisputed Era are now all in NXT now. A lot of the people that he built up and that he valued and embraced are either no longer with the company, are now under contract to AEW, or they are with the company, but they've sort of become known quantities in on W main roster, like Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn may be very happy in the role that he's in, but whatever he might have become under better creative guidance, it's getting pretty late in the game now. I suppose same thing with Kevin Owens.
Real quick, Tim B just had a super chat with us. Thanks again, Tim. Yes, Triple H ran NXT 1.0, but he did so without having to worry about money. I don't believe there will be major changes.
I don't think Triple H is going to have to worry about money in this case either. because like what does that mean? Does that mean that he's going to have to become an accountant? No, there's Frank Riddick and people like that to handle that, and there's people like Nick Khan to handle strategy, and his co-CEO Stephanie McMahon to handle other things that are more on the business side, while it's his responsibility to at this point to oversee talent relations and to oversee the creative, and it's his job to produce content that makes people want to engage with it and makes people want to pay money to see it. And WWE's in a really great place financially because they get guaranteed money from the USA Network, that is NBC Universal, and from Fox at this point. And it's Nick Khan's job to make sure that they get a really strong renewal when those deals are dealt next year and go into effect in late 2014. So I'm sure he's going to be working with budgets and things like that, and he probably has before. But NXT is just it's just a different magnitude of what he has responsibility over now.
We go back to brand equity. NXT isn't Raw or SmackDown. The general wrestling fan is going to watch Raw and SmackDown. So I think the platform is a big thing. Like,
and I will say this, it will be a challenge for him to do 5 hours of content every week, yep. even with a large group of talent. I'm sure that's not going to be easy. But at a minimum, it can't be worse for consumer engagement. His performance can't be worse, I don't believe, than Vince's performance.
And I know we don't talk too much about like booking as far as like who you want to see up and card out the card here, but I'm interested to see that with him taking over, like there has to be an undercard. Not everybody could be elevated. Who gets pushed at? Because I know there's rumors of T-Bar, who's been stuck at main event, being repackaged and getting a push, and I imagine we're going to see Mustafa Ali probably have a more prominent role, and he's been stuck on main event. Well, who people got to work on main event, you know? So I'm very intrigued to see.
You know who's on main event recently? I was like, oh, that's interesting. Almost.
Yeah.
There's going to be people who are not valued, obviously, as much. So anyway. I think Tony Khan and AEW are in a less advantageous position here now with a stronger, in my belief, stronger head of creative. It may or not be that strong. I know there's people who don't think it's going to be anything different. But if WWE is better than it was before, that's tougher competition for AEW. For fans, fan engagement and time, but also talent.
Yeah.
Talent, especially a lot of their talent, like Adam Cole, who have strong relationships and had positive relationships with Triple H.
I think a big part of AEW's identity and is the big splash. We got this move. We signed this guy. This person's here. Like, and there's less opportunity. There's going to be less opportunity to do that, to make those splashes that the fans would care about. And, you know, we kind of talked about 2 weeks ago when I was on, like, Sasha Banks, Naomi, Johnny Gargano. If none of those three sign with AEW, it does show a shift in.
I think a lot of that is about just what talent Tony is personally interested in working with.
Yeah.
And the degree to which he probably sees his personal taste as matching the market taste.
But his fans expect one, two, or maybe all three of those to come there. That's what his fans want. And you could see it on social media.
Okay. And I think I don't see the trajectory of women's wrestling in AEW changing anytime soon with this new situation.
Yes.
Sorry if we already said this in a prior episode, but if you, Chris Gullo, were a talented female wrestler and was offered a contract by WWE for X amount of dollars for X amount of time, same incentives as the same offer you're given by AEW, same incentive, same money, same time, which would you choose?
If I was a female talent, probably WWE, based on the, I mean, we do it when we do our reports. Like how
Chris Gull is speaking for all women who are wrestlers. There we go.
when we do the Who's a Draw, look how much female talent are featured on all three WWE programs.
I don't think AEW and its head of creative, Tony Khan, is that invested in women's wrestling and WWE, sort of even under Vince, is more invested and ahead of the game. And I don't see that changing now. So anyway, we'll move on to our final topic of the day here. We'll move away from Mr. Triple H and go to an interesting story. A quick kicker here. God, we're talking about Trump. Now you're going to make us talk about Elon Musk.
Yes, we're polarizing figures for sure.
Yes. This is just a clickbait podcast today, isn't it?
Somebody will accuse us of it anyway, so might as well own it.
So Bloomberg had an interesting report 2 days ago. So that would be what? Friday? So there's a lawsuit, for people who may not be acquainted. So Elon Musk tried to buy Twitter. He's trying to get out of his deal to buy Twitter. There's a lawsuit. Twitter is trying to force him to buy, to uphold the agreement that he made. Twitter is subpoenaing a number of people to gain evidence, right? Lots of big names in the investment world. Larry Ellison from Oracle, Ken Griffin from Citadel, Mark Andreessen. It goes on and on. But one of these names was interesting that Twitter has subpoenaed. Christina Salen, who is the former CFO of World Wrestling Entertainment and Etsy, who Twitter says advised Elon Musk on the deal. So people who are listeners of this program may be familiar with Christina Salen. She was dismissed as WCFO last November, the day after an earnings call, and replaced by a board member at that time and former interim CFO, Frank Riddick, now the permanent CFO. And we kind of got this impression from her social media earlier on when she joined WWE, is that she's a big fan of Elon and of Tesla. So coming to light here, at least in Twitter is claiming that she advised Elon Musk on the deal to acquire Twitter, which is just an interesting story. But that's all, and that's Christina Salen there with the AEW championship belt. But that's all I've got. What now?
Well, we are. We'll give our plugs. You can like and share and subscribe.
Like and share and subscribe. That helps people find this podcast on YouTube. Subscribe to it on your podcast app. Share it. Tell a friend about it. Tell them to listen to it. And Chris Gull has content too that you can check out.
Yeah, Rediscovering Indies. We just recently, a couple weeks ago, released part one of Dragon Gate USA. That was really the formation of it. We're going to really get into the business side of it as it ran after that for part two, which will be released later this month. That's RTI Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Rediscovering Indies on Facebook. Chris Gello, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And also, finally, I was approved for a pro wrestling tea store. And we will have Bowtie Mafia shirts coming when the Pro Wrestling Tee Store officially launches, which should be this week. So if you want a Bowtie Mafia shirt, you can get those.
Okay. The Patreon is patreon.com/WrestleNomics. If you want to read my long form analysis, written analysis about this, one of the subjects we talked about, which is how will wrestling be different? How will WWE be different post Vince McMahon? That is on the Patreon only. Actually, if you go to WrestleNomics.com, I've now set up, I'm now comfortable saying, because it seems to be working well enough. If you go to WrestleNomics.com, you will see all of the subscriber Patreon content on the front page alongside all the stuff that is for free. So if you're not a subscriber, you can still find all of the free stuff there, including the Trump article that we talked about earlier. That is for free. There's also subscriber content as well. But anyway, that's $5 a month for the Patreon subscriber content. You get the TV ratings reports that I write nearly every day. You get quarter hours as they're available. You get WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet with all of my TV ratings data in it. You get the slides to all of our podcasts, including this one. You get access to the pro wrestling industry reports for the annual years, 2019, 2020, 2021. And you get additional reporting and analysis as I write it. Patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Join the hundreds of subscribers, including wrestling executives and wrestlers who are in the business who subscribe. So I'll read us out. Thanks to our WrestleNomics contributors, Jason Unpresser, Dr. Chris Healy, Jesse Collins. Thanks to our technical consultant and Twitter, WrestleNomics ratings game operator, Phil Chertok. Special thanks to John Pollock and Waiting, Corey Gibson, Showbiz Daily, WrestleTix. WrestleNomics was created by Mookie, Chris Harrington. WrestleNomics Radio is distributed in partnership with Post Wrestling and is supported by listeners and viewers like you. And we have no grant from the Sears Roebuck Foundation just yet. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.